Health and Human Services Finance Committee will come to order. Representative Heintzman moves approval of minutes for March 2nd, 2017. Any additions, corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor of adoption of the minutes from March 2nd, please say aye. No, March 2nd minutes are adopted. Members, we have a couple of bills that we're going to do. The major bill is Representative David's reinsurance bill, House File 5. We do have a couple other smaller, quicker bills without testimony, and we'll shoot to get through very quickly. House File 1203 is first up with Representative Albright. Representative Albright moves that 1203 be re-referred to the General Register. We have the bill before us. I understand there's an A1 author's amendment. Representative Albright moves the A1 author's amendment. Representative Albright, two-year amendment.
Members, the health plans would like this sentence added. It clarifies the effective date for the language in House Bill 1203. I've discussed with all the stakeholders, and they say that they're fine with this. Just a matter of housekeeping.
All right. Questions to the A1 amendment? Seeing no questions, all those in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Albright, to your bill as amended.
Pretty straightforward bill brought by the Minnesota Academy of Ophthalmology prescription eye drops used to treat countless eye-related problems from young children, older adults. It's difficult to administer them based upon the number of drops that you get in there, so some people are ending up 3, 4, 5 days short of when they get the next prescription. This will allow them to go beyond that, simply to get those eye drops refilled in a manner in keeping with when they need them. No opposition, members, and Mr. Chair and I would stand for questions.
Questions for Representative Albright. All right. Seeing none, all those in, Representative Albright renews his motion that 1203, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. 1203, as amended, is re-referred. Thank you, Representative Albright. All right, Representative Schumacher, we have House File 1353. Representative Albright moves House File, Representative Schumacher moves House File 1353 be re-referred to the General Register. We have the bill before us. Representative Schumacher, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 1353 is a technical bill that came from nonpartisan research staff. It clarifies some language and strikes out some old statute and redirects statute where it needs to go.
All right. Questions for Representative Schumacher? All right. Seeing no questions, Representative Schumacher renews his motion that 1353 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All right. No. Motion prevails. House File 1353 is re-referred.
Mr. Chair, I did have about four testifiers, too, that had like 20 minutes or so of testimony.
They were half an hour, yeah.
No? Appreciate that, Representative Schumacher, and the committee thanks them for their service. All right. Next up, we will do House File 1571. This is just a very quick technical bill. I'm going to go ahead and do it from here unless anybody has any problem with that. I'm going to move House File 1571 be referred to the General Register. To Ways and Means. There's an author's, let's see. So this is... Okay.
All right. The state hospital attributes this.
Okay, I just been advised there's a drafting error, and I need to adopt House File A1, that's just page three, line 16, delete health and insert human services. All those in favor of adoption of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The A1 is adopted. And This bill changes the DHS gaps analysis for long-term care services to be every year rather than every other year. That's all the bill does. Appreciate your support. Any questions? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that in the past the gaps analysis has made a expectation and a dependency on local counties and area agencies on the on aging and others to contribute to information about the addition of new providers, new resources in the area. And does your bill change that in any way, and does it provide any funding for those local contributions?
It just changes the funding. It doesn't change the mechanism as you suggest.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up, does it provide any funding for that local contribution to this identification of needs and gaps?
No. Mr. Burke, can you amplify on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, if you check on page 3 of this, it makes no change whatsoever to the statutory requirements of the gaps analysis. All it does is change it from an once a biennium $435,000 appropriation to an each year $217,500. There was a problem this year that the MMB forgot to re-add this into the base because it's not in the second year. So that's the only change this makes, is it makes the pre-appropriation half of it in each year so that it will not get left behind.
Anybody from the audience want to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that 1571, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Motion prevails. 1571, as amended, is re-referred. All right. Next up, Representative Davids. Thank you for allowing the other members to get those out of the way. We do appreciate your patience, Representative Davids. Next. All right. I will go ahead and move House File 5 to be referred to the Committee on Taxes. We have the bill before us. Representative Davids, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. House File 5 is the next step in trying to solidify being able to have markets in 2018 in the individual market. The bipartisan bill, Senate File 1, was the first step that gave some funding to buy down premiums, had several reforms such as, three or four reforms in there. For example, continuity of care and others. This is, I call it the key linchpin of saving a market for 2018. In working with, we had a hearing in the Commerce Committee, and previous statements by Commissioner Rothman of the Department of Commerce, I think were very, very accurate, very, very true, and somewhat frightening as to where what could have happened in 2017 had the department not acted as quickly as they did. So now, members, what we need to do is we need to pass House File 5, the reinsurance bill, and I'll be right up front, as I always am, saying that I don't know if this is the way it looks in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, but in Commerce we had very convincing testimony by directly from Commissioner Rothman that we need to get this done so the carriers can set their rates. I think he said April 1st, I've heard March 31st. This has to be done. There are other bills out there. There's a Helverson bill that I believe we're hearing this week in Commerce with some different ideas. The department itself has some different ideas, and I'm open to all and any ideas. I'd like to tonight, though, however, explain how House File 5 works, and then I'd like a nonpartisan staff to go in the funding mechanism for the bill. And I talked earlier today, Representative Schultz has some ideas on financing also that we'll certainly want to hear about. House File 5 is a reinsurance bill. Basically, what a reinsurance bill does is it's designed to take some pressure off the carriers on the larger claims. Now, the way it works in this bill, or suggested at this point, is that there be a $50,000 attachment point, so the carriers would be on the hook for the first $50,000. Then from $50,000 to $250,000, there'd be a 50 to 70% coinsurance. And then after that, the carriers would be back on the hook for a claim. So what this does is this takes some pressure off the carriers through the reinsurance mechanism. The Minnesota Conference of Health Association 1976, in the past, you had a separate policy. An insurance licensed insurance agent wrote a policy. If you had all the presumptive conditions, you could get on that plan. This will not look like that. However, the MSHA board will be the board used to administer this program. Now, when I said a $50,000 attachment point, I should have stated that that's the minimum it could be. So if they wanted to, if the MSHA board says a $75,000 attachment point or a $60,000, that's up to them. They're going to need to be able to have a little flexibility here. And it's up to a $250,000 attachment point. So it could be $200,000, $225,000, whatever the board decides. As far as the coinsurance between the lowest point and the highest point, it's 50 to 70%. The board will establish that through actuarial work and studies to make sure that they have that where it best serves the people of Minnesota. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that's what the bill does. There's other alternatives out there that we've been looking at, and I've met with the department, the commissioner, Commissioner Rothman, Mr. Brickwitty, and others. I agree with Commissioner Rothman 100%. I mean, this has to be done. It has to be done very quickly. So the question is, as it goes through the committee process, how do we design it? I obviously like to design House File 5. I think it's simple. It's clean. It's to the point. Here it is. It's a reinsurance mechanism like reinsurance mechanisms work. But I'm certainly open to other ideas with presumptive conditions. I think the Halverson bill, and we'll be talking about that later this week in Commerce, and some proposals by the department have an attachment, or excuse me, have a presumptive condition somewhat designed after the Alaska plan, where if you have a certain condition, it's picked up 100% from dollar one. And that will certainly be open for debate. So, members, this is a work in progress. It has, normally when I bring a bill to me, this is the way it is, and here it is. That's not the case tonight with House File 5, because working closely with the Department of Commerce and Commissioner Rothman and folks in the department, others in the governor's office, there's some tax issues here, so I'll be hearing from Commissioner Bowerly on some of these things tomorrow. But those are discussions for another day. Today is looking at how the mechanism works, how it would be funded. And, Mr. Chairman, if I could go to nonpartisan fiscal staff to kind of just summarize what the bill does as far as the financing part.
That sounds good, Representative David. Should we go ahead and put on the author's A2 first?
That would be good if someone could move.
I will move the House, amendment A2. Questions for the A2 amendment? Seeing no questions, all those in favor of adoption of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Davids, the bill is amended, and if you'd like to have fiscal staff kind of march through some of the funding sources, I think that would be helpful. That would
be great, and then there's some testifiers.
We do have several testifiers.
Mr. Chair, I'll just highlight the sections if you want that have money attached to them.
Yeah, Mr. Berg, I think we'll do that, but before we do that, we should probably take up the A3 amendment. Representative Schultz moves the A3 amendment, and we can discuss that first. Representative Schultz to the A3 amendment.
So the A3 amendment is the proposal as a source of revenue to fund the reinsurance program, and essentially it is a fee on the claims by third-party administrators, so it would even include the fees on claims by those who are self-insured, and it would avoid the ERISA preemption and health insurance carriers the reimbursement amount on their claims as well. So it would be up to 1%. Fee on those claims, and this is the most broad-based revenue stream we could get to fund to shore up the individual health insurance market as a source of revenue.
All right. Questions? Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thank Representative Schultz for bringing this idea forward. I need to know more about this before I would, support it at this point. But the initial, and we've talked some about this, my initial thought is, why would we put a tax to raise the price of the premium when we're trying to lower the premium? So I'm a little concerned. I know it's the state of Michigan has done something similar to this, but they have a blink off, I believe, in 2020. So it's a very temporary thing for them. It's not a permanent solution, if you will. It's an interesting idea. I've been working for years on trying to figure out how to get around ERISA plans and have them play the game too here. But I would, at this time, respectfully oppose the amendment, but continue to visit with Representative Schultz on funding mechanisms.
Representative Schultz? Oh, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I wanted to thank Representative Schultz for bringing this tonight, and certainly it needs study and examination by the tax committee. When we in Minnesota first passed Minnesota Care, it was a program funded through the general fund in the second year after Governor Carlson vetoed it. The legislature came up with the provider tax, which was challenged in court. It was a novel idea at the time. It was a way to try and fund a health care program from within health care in order to try and contain cost inflation. And it was tested and went to court and found constitutional, I guess, or it passed muster. And it is still in place today. Not everybody loves that, but there it is. So I today was the first day I really had a chance to take a look at this idea, and I like it for its novelty. And I don't want, I know we probably won't vote on it tonight, but I think Representative Davids, I'm grateful that you're going to have a look at it, and I hope that Representative Schultz continues to look at it as well. Because we do have some issues in front of us in terms of health care financing, especially if the Affordable Care Act is repealed and we've got that big sinkhole in the health care budget. So I just wanted to say thank you. And, this is, I don't know if this works or doesn't work, but I'm glad you brought it tonight.
All right. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was kind of hoping that we were going to have more of a discussion of the bill itself before we went to the amendment, because I want to ask Representative Davids, you said that this is a tax on insurance and it would raise premiums, and, you know, I'm sure that's probably true. Anytime you're going to put a tax on insurance, you're going to raise premiums. But that's what we used to do with MCHA, and as I recall, MCHA was funded at least in part by a tax on insurance. And okay, but anyway, I wanted to ask you if as we consider what I assume is an alternate funding proposal, if we could first understand what your funding proposal is. I mean, could you just give us some more explanation? I know you're asking to have fiscal staff do that, but, you know, I want to understand what it is that we're proposing to replace here before we give consideration to the proposed replacement.
Thank you, Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Liebling. First of all, as amended, I just want to maybe explain a little bit what the amendment did. I mean, what the amendment did, this was what we learned in civil law, that there's a problem or a concern that the OLA had on data. And when you start talking data, my eyes kind of start to glaze over just a bit, I'll admit. But what the amendment did, it allows the Office of the Legislative Auditor to keep data according to its schedule under Chapter 3. That's all the amendment did, so that they don't have to go through another schedule. They can do what they're doing now, and that seemed to make some sense to me. So, but as far as the funding goes, I'm still going to ask the fiscal folks to get it so it's explained right to the point as to where we're at now. And I guess we're, if that's okay with the chairman, I mean, we are on the A3.
Yep, we are currently discussing the A3 Schultz Amendment. But we could have Mr. Berg want to, if members don't want to vote on that yet, we could certainly have Mr. Berg walk through the the mechanism by which Representative David's bill funds it, and then perhaps you could immediately go back and talk about Representative Schultz's amendment if you're prepared to do that, Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, I certainly can talk about the funding sources in the bill. I don't know if you, I'll stick to just the sections that have funding in them. So if members would turn to page 10, section 9, this dedicates the existing gross premium tax that is now deposited in the health care access fund on gross premiums of HMOs, and it dedicates that to the premium security plan included in the bill. The current health care access fund balance in the last forecast, that is $80.6 million in fiscal 18 and $83.7 million in fiscal 19. Section 10, right below that, you'll see transfers dedicates $70 million a year in 18 and 19 of other health insurance, insurance taxes to the health premium account, for a total of $140 million in the biennium. And then on page 11, section 14 requires the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association to deposit all money, including monetary reserves, into the premium security account. I have heard varying estimates of the size of that reserve, but I think it's in the 20 to 30 million range. And then if you go to page 12, section 17, it requires a transfer of $80 million during the 18-19 biennium from balances in the healthcare access account. And if you look further up on the page on 12.9, it gives you an indication that $50 million of that is transferred in fiscal 18, and then the balance would be transferred in fiscal 19. If you add those all together, there is a biennial total of $380 million plus the MCHA reserve in this bill, and that does not address any federal funds that might be coming down the line separately for that. As to the Schultz amendment, I can't really speak to the size of that.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. Representative Schultz, could you just walk through where the money comes from in the A3 amendment and how that works?
So it's essentially a fee on the reimbursement level on every claim that's processed by a third-party administrator. So that would include a self-insured plan that uses a TPA, and then claims generated that go through a health insurance carrier. And so it's much more broad than a fee on specific health insurance carriers that we've seen with the individual health insurance market, or MCHA, and it's more broad than the provider tax. So, even the provider tax has led to increases in premiums, but this would be very small, like pennies in premiums, and it gets around ERISA, which I think great Chair Davids has been trying to do. There's been several court cases where now you see that it's being allowed to put a fee or assessment on the claims by TPAs to get around the ERISA requirements. So I think we still need more conversation about this idea, so I don't want to vote on it today, but I want this committee to ask questions about it, because it will likely come up in the tax committee tomorrow.
All right. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you said earlier, this is a work in progress, and it's probably going to change. Why would we not include Representative Schultz's amendment as we're going forward to make sure it doesn't get lost in the shuffle?
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Constant, and I like mine better.
Okay. Well,
that'd be the main thing, but also I am intrigued by what Representative Schultz is doing here. It seems that it's so broad. I think it covers every product line, and I have to believe that would we be running into a double taxation situation, and that's the question for tax committee that will be briefed on by tomorrow. I think the Schultz amendment collects a lot more than what we're trying to do here. But I don't know that. I don't know that for sure. But it seems pretty broad. Even though it's a low number, it's very broad. And we're picking up more than just the health insurance, which I'm certainly willing to look at. But I don't know how much this would collect. And members, this situation is so fluid right now. I mean, we don't know. I mean, do the feds do block grants to the state? How does that play in with how we're funding this? This is a situation where we have to have this done by April 1st, and I don't think we'll know by April 1st what's passed out in D.C., and we're going to be able to have to bob and weave and move and adjust on these things. And so I am certainly not saying that the A3 amendment dismissing it out of hand. I just don't know enough about it, and I will know more about it shortly.
Representative Schultz, do you have any idea how much money this rakes in?
Well, we don't know, but the amendment is misworded. It should say up to 1%, so I think that'll be much smaller than 1%, half a percent or less, because it is more broad-based. But that's the strength of this amendment, is that how broad-based it is spread out. And so I think it's much more efficient than what we currently do, and probably a better idea than raiding some of our funds, because we don't know what will happen at the federal level, to have that up there to shore up our current programs.
All right. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that was the question I wanted to ask. From what Mr. Briggs said, it sounds like a lot of money gets redirected from Healthcare Access Fund to this. I guess the question is, what happens to the programs? What will replace the funds in the Healthcare Access Fund?
Representative Davis.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Pinto, thank you. This is a work in progress, and that's a very, very good question. I don't know the answer to it at this point. I really don't. I'm putting forward a proposal that would work now. When the Healthcare Access Fund goes away, guess what? We've got some things we have to do to plug some holes here. No question about it. But, well, actually, no, not on the healthcare. No, we're fine there because we're taking the 1% tax on the HMOs. But we are using Healthcare Access Fund money that at some point here, the way the law stands now, is gone by 2019. So this thing, you know, let's say we pass this bill as amended today and governor signs into law. There's going to be changes regardless down the road. And I'm not saying that we're at that point. We're not at that point because the Department of Commerce has some very good testimony in Commerce Committee regarding this. And Representative Pinto, I think you were there with some of their concerns. But, you know, this is a very, very serious situation that this legislature has to take care of now. And when you talk to Commissioner Rothman, you can sense his urgency on getting some things done now. Now, if it's the straight-up reinsurance plan like I have in my bill, if it's some presumptive conditions or a combination of both, maybe some of the Halverson bill, some of the Davids bill, House File 5, I don't know that yet. But this is taking a tour of the legislature. We've been in commerce. We've been in civil law. I've never been in civil law before. That was something. That was interesting. We'll just leave it at that. And now we're in, you know, finance, health and human services, and taxes, ways and means, and then hopefully to the floor by Monday is what we're hoping for. So we've got a lot of work to do in a short period of time. And then what my goal is to get this to conference committee so we can bring the department in, bring the Senate in, bring House members in to put this together.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I think I said in Commerce, I'm new to this, so still trying to figure this out. But it's, if I'm understanding you correctly, Mr. Chair, it sounds like an understanding of the situation. We've got the provider tax, which is mostly funding the Healthcare Access Fund, which is funding Minnesota Care and medical assistance, which are the programs for the poorest Minnesotans. This would redirect, the bill as written right now, would redirect the Healthcare Access Fund to this new program, relying on money coming from the provider tax, which is itself going to go away. So then we've got, I probably am misunderstanding this, but this is what I'm asking, right? Because then you'll clear me up. But I'm just trying to understand that series of things. So it seems like we still then got the problem of funding Minnesota Care and medical assistance. But what am I missing in that?
Representative Davis. Well, Representative Pinto, I think the 2% provider tax does go away. There is a remnant tax on the 1% that will remain, that survives beyond that. That's what Representative Bill addresses. That does currently go directly into the Healthcare Access Fund. This would propose setting up an entirely different fund outside of that. And, of course, we have concerns about where the money from the Healthcare Access Fund currently goes. and we would have similar concerns that I think you rightly bring up about the use of the funds in this proposed, or the use of money, how it gets used from this new fund.
And so, Mr. Chair, just to follow up, so would this proposal then continue to fund Minnesota Care and Medical Assistance, or would we then need to find another source of funding for them?
Representative Pinto, the 2% provider tax that funds the health care access fund, that funds, as you correctly point out, those is going to go away in December of 2019, and we need to, that funding source goes away, and it is in our spreadsheets currently for the first time, so we're going to have to be dealing with that.
So it sounds like this bill would not, I mean, so we still would need to find funding, though, for Minnesota Care and for medical assistance. And this, the health care access money that is currently going to those things would be redirected to this program, and we'd need to find a different funding source, at least over the next couple of years, for Minnesota Care and medical assistance. I'm new to the area, so just asking the questions.
I think when the legislature decided to expand Medicaid, in Minnesota, we had a very large federal investment of money to do that. The Minnesota Care BHP program is heavily dependent on federal funding, as you may know. And we don't understand, we don't know where that's going to go. We'll have to figure that out as we go along of what exactly that means. But what we can make budgets off of our own law, which is what we're going to be doing moving forward. Representative David's reinsurance bill seeks to fund a small portion of this into a reinsurance funding pool and mechanism. That's what that 1% does. It doesn't go away with the 2% provider tax. It doesn't deal with how to fund all the other stuff at this point. We're just funding the reinsurance pool at this point.
Thank you.
Representative Franzen, then Loeffler, then
Grinzigan. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Prior to the ACA, Minnesotans had insurance they could afford and deductibles they could afford, and now here we are figuring out how Minnesotans can afford health insurance once again so that they can hopefully afford the care that they may need. So thank you, Representative Davids, for bringing forward a bill that hopefully will start addressing those costs. Representative Schultz, I'm wondering regarding your tax. It seemed to be pretty broad. So if Minnesotans have a pre-tax account or a flexible spending account or an HSA account, would they be taxed on each time they use that? I'm just kind of wondering how that would work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that question, Representative. No, the tax would not be paid by the individual on their HSA account. It would be at the level of the health insurance or the insurer or the TPA, and that fee would be on the claim itself.
So basically, yes, we still are paying it.
No, we're not paying it.
Okay.
No, we're not paying it.
I think we are.
All right, then. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we're still trying to understand the finances here. If I understood Mr. Berg correctly, the biennial total of all the different transfers and funding sources identified in the bill is $380 million for a biennium plus the MCHA reserve. And I wonder if Representative Davids knows what the MCHA reserve would be about.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Loeffler, I believe it's about $35 million sitting in the Department of Commerce right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so then we're talking about $400 million in a biennium. And I didn't hear in your introduction to the bill, and I don't serve on the Commerce Committee, so I didn't get to hit the background there, but what the impact is expected of this $400 million investment in terms of reduced premiums, reduced copays or deductibles. I mean, what for $400 million scrounged from all kinds of different places, you creatively grabbed a lot of funds. We know that from our first bill that it was about $300 million to reduce premiums 25% for about 125,000 people. This would be, if you if we're targeting that same $125,000, it'd be over $3,000 per person. Tell me what the impact is. Have you had estimates out of the insurers or others that you can give us a sense of, if we implemented this, what do you think is going to happen on rates, on access to insurance?
Representative Davids, and I just would point out, Representative Loeffler, we do have several testifiers from the plans and from hospitals that can probably go to a little bit more of your question about how that might impact them from their branch on the tree. But Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's Representative Loeffler's question. Senate File 1 put about over $300 million in a one-time shot 1 year to buy it down about 25%. So if you take it over by any, that'd be about $600 million to do that. What we're doing here is I've seen projections and illustrations from the Department of Commerce what their plan. I've seen what some folks think this plan may be, and I really don't want to say. And the reason I don't is because as soon as you say it, you're wrong. Because if you say 15% and it's 12%, you were wrong. If you say 20% and it was 25%, you're wrong. I'd like to be wrong in that direction. But there's a lot of the situation is very fluid on those types of numbers. And you know, what we did in Senate File 1, 2 years ago, the premiums went up on average about 40%. This last year, 67%, that's 107%. Minus the 25% buy down, we're still 82% higher. So this bill is so important to start to drive down, but not only to drive down prices, which is something I want to do, and I'm not going to give a percent because I don't know. I really don't know. We can talk to some actuaries, maybe some of the other plans and other folks have some good ideas, but I would not want to sit here and say a certain percent because you're going to be wrong no matter what. But the main goal for me in this bill is to help create a market for 2018 where you have more carriers coming in because they'll look at their risk basically in a more favorable fashion when they know that they're going to have some pressure taken off because of the attachment points and the coinsurance within the attachment points, high and low. And so maybe when we have some folks testify, they might give some projections, but I find that's a very dangerous business because you're always wrong.
Mr. Chair, I understand. I always at least like a range because, you know, while we're used to big numbers in this committee, maybe not quite as big as what you get to play with in the tax committee, we still always want to know the impact and who's affected. I don't think we can use looking back at the percentage increases in the individual market because for those of us who went to the Joint House Senate nonpartisan learning at the Humphrey School, the one Minnesota, we had national experts, one a Republican who had consulted with Republican administrations and one a Democrat who deal with this extensively. And both of them said and agreed that our situation is really unique in the individual market because we had one carrier who tried to buy the market with unreasonably low prices the first year. They dropped out the second year, and that we were still whipsawing from that, and that's why we didn't see those big increases in the small group market, the large group market, because they didn't have those kind of dynamics going on. And so I think rather than looking at the worst case of the back, I think we need to look at, okay, now that we're here, what going forward is going to make a difference? And I thought it was interesting that both of those national experts who had no business in Minnesota other than coming in as national experts felt like our situation was unique in the whole nation.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, and I thank Representative Loeffler for those comments. And I don't want to look back either. I want to look forward on how do we get a good, strong, solid market for 2018. That's all I care about right now at this point. We can go back and say woulda, shoulda, coulda. I don't know where that gets us at this point. We need to move forward on, and there'll be reform provisions after this. I don't think this is the last on the health reform to create a strong, stable market for 2018. So that's
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Davis, or Chair Davis, for bringing this bill forward. Again, just a quick first question is, you're not creating any new taxes in this bill to fund the reinsurance program, correct?
It's thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Grunhagen. We're looking at existing taxes And then as a backstop, we use the MSHA money with the $35 million. Hopefully, we don't have to use that. Amen. I don't want to use that, but that is a backstop. I'm hoping that the newly composed MSHA board, well, the MSHA board that's there, and Commissioner Rothman brought some very good points. There may need to be some changes made on the board because there's some folks that it really doesn't apply. On the MSHA board, there had to be two enrollees, and I'm not sure. I've never seen an enrollee on a reinsurance plan before, but that's up for discussion with the department. But no, if we're using existing taxes, we're basically diverting money from some other funds. And then the question is, well, what happens there? Well, this is an ongoing process where decisions will have to be made to make this work.
Mr.
Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Davis. Yeah, I think the other thing to understand for all of us members is that the ACA brought in reforms that have created a death spiral in the individual market. We've lost about 30% just this year of individual health insurance insureds. And when you lose that percentage in any insurance market, you create a death spiral. And that would be a tremendous loss in the state of Minnesota. And one of the reasons why is because, so part of this bill is to try to slow that death spiral, if not hopefully stop it completely. And to the degree it would actually reduce premiums, that is up for question. But you know, one of the things to understand, government programs are a big part of the problem in terms of reimbursement to doctors and hospitals, both Medicaid and Minnesota Care. And private insurance reimburses at a much higher rate. And actually, from the input I've had, doctors and hospitals actually can make some money on private insurance reimbursement. They lose money on Medicaid and Minnesota Care reimbursement. So this stresses out the healthcare system. So not only does the loss of private insurance hurt people's ability to buy a product and access healthcare, it hurts our healthcare industry, okay, and actually causes problems in that industry in terms of the type of care that is provided, especially to people on government programs. You know, I'm in the strong opinion that if we don't stop the spread of government programs, we're going to wind up with a two-tier health insurance industry here in the state, one for the rich, the privileged, and the connected, and a second one, a second-rate health care plan for the rest of the state. I see this move as something that's absolutely necessary to slow the death spiral and to somehow continue to create reimbursement at a level that doctors and hospitals can actually make ends meet. Because we've been cost-shifting from government programs to the private insurance industry for 40 years, which is one of the reasons your premiums have gone up so high. Last point is we've created a huge bureaucracy which for the most part has damaged the healthcare industry, both at the federal and state level, that desperately needs to be reformed, and hopefully we can address that in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I bet this won't be the last time I speak tonight, unless you cut me off. But I just want to say.
This is the last bill?
Okay.
We're all strapped in. Got 4 hours, so.
I put my seatbelt on. So it is good. I think that we're having what feels like a real conversation about how to solve a problem. I think that's a good thing. Representative Grunhagen, you're talking about the healthcare system being stressed out, and I got to say this discussion. I mean, sometimes some of the things you say stress me out. That's the way that goes.
Yeah, I have an application available.
Representative Pinto was asking an important question, and I think that we have to, you know, be clear tonight, and I would love it if we could continue to be clear as we go forward and as you work on this, Representative Davis, about the choices that we're going to make and the consequences that may come as a result. And I also think when we talk about this tonight, we've got to talk about it in, for, at least for me, I'm going to try and talk about what I see happening without judgment or finger pointing, but with an eye on what I think is happening. Because and I've said this a couple of times now, I feel like we've spent the last 6 years kind of stuck in defending or opposing the Affordable Care Act, and we haven't really been able to move out of those lanes, and maybe this is a chance for us to do it, although what I have to say, I think, is probably not going to, you're not going to necessarily agree with it, right? So, first of all, for Representative Franzen, it's just not the case that people had access to affordable coverage before the Affordable Care Act, and then they didn't. I mean, before the Affordable Care Act, people who had pre-existing conditions didn't get to buy health insurance. They just didn't get health insurance. There are plenty of people who have come to the legislature and have testified about not having access to coverage.
That's such a lie.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you. I'm not a liar. I'll just say that. I'm a nurse, right? I've taken care of people that haven't had access to coverage. So I would appreciate it. You know, if you're going to say I'm a liar, you say it into the mic, and you said, oh, I'm not going to go any further, but that's unacceptable behavior in a committee. It is also the case that people had lifetime limits, and if they exceeded their lifetime limits, they were kicked out of their coverage as well. So people with very serious conditions would get to a point at which insurance companies could say, we're not going to cover you anymore. You've reached your max. Someone like Representative Zerwas would be in that category, right? So I think we should just have eyes wide open about what has been our past so we can figure out how to build a future healthcare system that works for the people of Minnesota. If we divert money from the healthcare access fund, like the premium tax that's been put in place there, to pay for this, it's going to put a hole in that budget. And if we see the repeal of the provider tax happen in 2019, it means that Minnesota Care, which is a funding program, a coverage program for Minnesotans, it won't be funded anymore. So we would be, by supporting this idea, making a choice. We're making a choice, and we're saying we want to make sure that we're creating a reinsurance mechanism for our insurance companies. And I say this with all due respect to the insurance companies. What we're talking about is high-risk people, the people who cost a lot. And the insurance companies are coming to us and saying, we're having a hard time bearing that cost, that risk, so we want some help from the taxpayers to cover that. And we'll cover the upper end, but we want some help in the middle part. And I think that's a fair policy question for us to ask ourselves. And it's a fair policy question to talk about it in terms of the individual market. But if we take money out of what is the healthcare access fund to help out the insurance companies, does that then mean that the people who are getting their coverage in Minnesota Care are going to get shorted down the line? And I think if we don't fix that, I think, yes, they will. So we're essentially saying, We're gonna help out the insurance companies and stabilize the individual market, but we're gonna then deprioritize low-income people who get their coverage through Minnesota Care. That's one of the choices that's before us as a committee, and I think we just have to be really clear about it, right? Representative Pinto is also right that part of the healthcare access fund goes to cover people in medical assistance. Again, very low-income people, and we know that the disease burden gets higher for people in Medicaid, right? So people in Medicaid are sicker than people in Minnesota Care, and they are sicker than the people in MainShare. And the healthiest people are largely in the employer-based market, right? We know that part too. So if we decide that we're going to shift resources from Minnesota Care, the Healthcare Access Fund, and Medicaid to pay for reinsurance, we're putting more of a burden on people who are low income and sick or potentially doing that. And I think we have to be eyes wide open about that as well, and provide, you know, answers to those questions, not just wait and see what's going to happen with Congress. We've got to take action here. So, my statements. Now I just have a couple of questions, I guess for Representative Davids, or if there are people in the audience that can help. So first of all, I've heard a couple of different numbers related to the MSHA reserve. And I've heard 20, and I've heard 25 and $30 million. And I'm wondering, Representative Davids, if you know, or if we should have someone from Commerce come down and just let us know what's actually in that fund, since this bill is, you know, in part funded with that reserve.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Murphy. I believe there's $30 to $35 million in the fund. I do want to clear one thing up, though. When the Grumhagen question was asked about a new tax, we use the funding sources we use. We use the $30-35 million from MSHA, and there is a blink on MSHA tax that the way this is designed, we better never get there. But just to make sure that if it happens in October or November, that they don't have to come back here, that would be a very short-term temporary tax to do that. But I have to address some things that were said by my good and dear friend, Representative Murphy E. You talked about helping insurance companies. Well, the way I look at it, if you're helping insurance companies and they can lower rates, you're helping people. You're helping Minnesotans, what you're doing. And for anyone that says we're better off now than we were before the AC, and I didn't want to go backwards, but I just couldn't let that one go. We were so much better off before the AC. It's not even close. Much lower premiums, much lower deductibles, much less coinsurance. It's not even close. It used to be you go from $100 to a $250 deductible. That was the big question. And then you had 80-20 until $2,000 out of a pocket. That was the big question. Now we have $4,400, and you could afford it. MSHA couldn't be more than 1.25% above the average. I had clients come to me saying they got a big raise from their health insurance company, and MSHA was a better deal for them. It was a better deal for them. So we were much, much better off before. But I didn't want to go there because that doesn't help us move forward. So when you bring up that, that's just fantasy land is what that is. So everyone had access to policies. No one was denied care previously. And when you talk about when I first started the insurance business, it was a $250,000 top end for MSHA. And you know, as Commerce Chair, all those years, what we did every year, there was one guy that was getting up towards the limit. The next year, we raised it to $500,000. Then we raised it to $1 million. Then we raised it to $2 million. Then I think it went to $5 million for one guy. And you know what? I carried that. I was happy to do that every year for that gentleman. It took care of that young man that had some real serious situations. But as far as all these people that have coverage, that is B as in B and S as in S. That is simply not true. The way it was before was much, much better. No one was denied care. No one was denied insurance before, but I'm not going there.
All right, Representative Davids. Representative Murphy, we are going to bring up testifiers. We have eight testifiers that I would like to get to, the first of whom will be from the Department of Commerce. So that would probably be the best place to direct your question there. Before I do that, I would like to act on the A3 amendment. Representative Schultz, would you
draw that amendment?
Representative Schultz withdraws the A3 amendment. Thank you, Representative Schultz. And I'm sure the discussion will continue on into taxes and beyond. And thank you for bringing that forward and for the discussion around that. Representative Lunin.
Well, I'm just going to be very, very brief because Chair David said basically what I was going to say is, Representative Murphy, I'm not going to call you a liar, but I'm going to call you wrong. I've been in the business for 35 years, and there was no one I could not write health insurance on. And actually, when someone got up to their limit, exactly, you just extended it up higher. We were able to do that through MSHA. And that's not my opinion. That's the facts.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy, we're going to go back to you, and then we have Ms. O'Connor from the department who's here to answer questions about that. And then I would like to try to get through all eight testifiers, and then after that we can go ahead and definitively decide whether or not Obamacare was a good idea.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
I was not the one who asserted that before the Affordable Care Act, everything was rosy. I didn't say that. But what I did say was that people could be excluded from coverage, and lifetime limits were in place so people who were very sick could lose their coverage. And, you know, you may have your experience as a person who sells policies, but I am a person who takes care of sick people. So I have my own experience and my own point of view. And I have seen it is astounding to me that you have not encountered somebody who has been denied care, who has gotten inadequate care. Even since the passage of the Affordable Care Act, I don't understand how your eyes are closed to that. Have you been to a homeless shelter? Have you been to a homeless shelter and seen it populated with people with mental illness and not getting the right kind of care? Have you been to a homeless shelter that has hospital beds in it and people who are discharged from a hospital because they didn't have any place to go and they're there in a hospital bed in a homeless shelter, but there's nobody there to take care of them?
even today with the Affordable Care Act, people are not getting adequate care. And so you can talk about how you worked your policies and your generosity, but you are missing some of our history. And this is something I've been working on for 25 years here in Minnesota. And there have been periods of time in Minnesota where people didn't have access to coverage because they didn't get through their workplace and they couldn't buy it on their own. There are periods of time in Minnesota when veterans who didn't qualify for veterans' benefits because they didn't have enough disqualification didn't have access to care or coverage. This is hard work for us. And I respect your experience. And I respect where you have walked. And I expect that from you as well and from the committee members because I, too, have professional and policy experience, years of it. And I know for a fact that there are people that are getting inadequate care in Minnesota today. There are people that have had inadequate or no coverage in the state of Minnesota despite our generosity. And we are now tinkering with what has been something that has come together so people have access to coverage. We're going to tinker with it. We're going to move some money around to try and solve a problem that's going to put a hole in someplace else. And we have to understand that, the choices that we're making, the consequences that are before us in the future and for Minnesotans. That's all I'm saying. And I think you have to have your eyes wide open just like I do.
Representative Lumen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Murphy. I have said this I don't know how many times. The problem with health care is the cost of health care. So maybe we actually have agreement, all right? But anyone has always been able to get health insurance. It's just, could you afford it or are you willing to pay for it? And the moves we've made haven't helped that, and frankly, this move isn't going to help it either. And we talked about that what we need to do is we need to eventually address, and hopefully we can do it as one group, as legislators, to address and put in mechanisms that address the cost of health care, which I feel is going to fall on the consumer's effort that they're going to have to do, that they're going to have to come in and do it. And you change your assertion a little bit that there are people that don't have health care because they couldn't pay for it. But that wasn't your earlier statement. There's always been access to it, and I'm hoping that we come back to something like that. The reinsurance plan that's proposed in this bill basically is an insurance company. We're giving insurance companies that cap out what they see as the biggest problem. And what it's going to set up is the next couple moves we need to do to really address this, and that means we need to have more options that's going to cause some competition to put a downward pressure on healthcare, which nothing is doing right now. So fundamentally, we probably have an agreement that the cost is the problem. And I'm willing to work with you, I'm willing to work with anybody to come up with ideas that will intrinsically bring the market back in where people will shop and get that cost down.
Representative Davids.
I'll stand for questions on House File 5.
All right. Ms. O'Connor is here from Deputy Commissioner from Commerce. I understand you have some testimony, and then you could also entertain questions.
Sure, absolutely.
Welcome, Commissioner. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Ann O'Connor, Deputy Commissioner and Chief of Staff of the Minnesota Department of Commerce. The department greatly appreciates the opportunity to testify today on House File 5, which establishes a state-based reinsurance program for the individual market. I will keep my comments brief. I know it's already been a very long day. After the instability in the individual market leading into the 2017 plan year, the department supports exploring all ideas to create stability for this year and into the future, increase access for Minnesotans, and ensure that any ideas do not create unintended consequences for either Minnesota Care or the federal APTC. These three key goals should be kept front and center when adopting a mechanism to help the individual market. Affordability is a key factor in attracting and retaining healthy people in the market. This will result in a larger, more diverse, and stable risk pool. That, in turn, helps to keep premiums down and stability for health carriers. Providing health insurance at a rate that creates greater access to coverage is important, but so is finding a solution to create greater network access across the state. Protecting Minnesota care and federal tax credits is also important. This reinsurance bill needs to include enabling enabling legislation for the department to apply for a 1332 waiver to capture the federal APTC cost savings as a funding source for reinsurance and to ensure that the funding formula for the BHP is held harmless. We also support a fiscally sustainable program, one that maximizes the positive impact of the funding on the market while achieving the other two goals. This also includes an ongoing and flexible funding mechanism for reinsurance. I have a few concerns about HF5 that I would like to discuss this evening. One is the program size. Commerce's analysis is that the current House File 5 language would establish a program that is smaller than needed. A particular concern is the uncertainty of the wording of each of the parameters. For example, an attachment point of $50,000 or more, or a co-insurance rate of between 50 and 70%, and a reinsurance cap of $250,000 or less. If the lesser is used in all or any one of these three cases, it will shrink the size of the program and be insufficient. Another concern that the department has with the bill that that Representative Davis already discussed is the board composition, to continue to look at the board to ensure that there's equal distribution of membership. We also have concern about the board reports. In the bill, the MSHA board is required to report on what premium increases in the individual market will be for the next year if the program isn't fully funded, and we do not believe that the board will have the ability to accurately report this information. It also states that in the event that the state does not receive a 1332 waiver, the board is to report to the legislature on the impact of that decision on the overall health insurance market and health plan affordability. Again, we don't believe that the board will likely have the ability to accurately report on this. We do have a concern regarding the agency costs, Representative Davids, and that is that the waiver application does require a 10-year actuarial analysis and quite a few public hearings that will include costs to the department, and so I'd ask that you continue to look at that. And finally, the challenge we face in Minnesota's individual market is significant. There are a variety of options being put forward at this time, and all deserve to be fully reviewed and publicly vetted to determine which can best help Minnesotans in the individual market. The Commerce Department is available as a resource to provide technical expertise as you deliberate on what solution will benefit Minnesota families. And we are here to help and continue to be in conversation with you, Representative Davids, and everyone at the table. Finally, I would underscore the need to pass legislation quickly so it can be implemented by 2018. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Halverson has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony. I just wanted to go back to the question of the MSHA reserves. As everybody is looking for funding sources, it's something that I looked at as well when I was putting a bill together, and it was very clear to me that it was legal to make this transfer, that it would be allowed under current state law, and I wanted to see if that is a hurdle that we need to address, and also if you have a sense of where the MSHA reserves would stand today and what might be available to us if we are able to access that fund for this purpose.
No matter.
Thank you, Chair, Representative. I have not looked into all of the questions that you posed this evening. First and foremost, I believe that the amount currently left with MSHA, and it's not a reserve, but would be roughly $35 million, and the department can look on the legality of whether or not the legislature can appropriate those funds, and we can get back to you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And who knows, I might have dreamt that. I don't know where I heard it, but I remember that hearing that there might be a hurdle. So I'd appreciate it if you're able to get back to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. Well, Commissioner, I just had one question just from the Commerce's perspective. You know, when the legislature came in this year, we had premium reduction, which was a priority to try to get money out to stabilize the market, try to get the individual market, to try to get that provide relief for premium payers. And that was $300 million. And now here we are, before the budget comes out, we're talking about another $400 million into this reinsurance pool. And we have many, many priorities from the committee, from home and community-based services that are delivered by folks that really need increases, developmentally disabled people, all kinds of folks that really have real needs that we would like to be able to fund. Yet we're seeing about, you know, $700 million towards health care dedicated out the door before we even take up our bill. So that has members of this committee very concerned about just the raw costs of this issue before we even take up our omnibus bill. And that's a real concern. So we are rightly concerned with this much money coming out of the Healthcare Access Fund and setting up a new fund that is not necessarily yet chartered about spending that much money. So it's a little concerning to hear that you say that this is not enough money within this bill to do what we need to do. Is that correct?
Chair Dean, the way that the department has approached looking at reinsurance is by looking at what we believe would be a sufficient or affordable per member per month premium, and that's how we've based our assumptions on it. And so we looked at when the market started to drop, go down, and it was about 2 years ago, and at that point in time, the per member per month average premium was roughly $450. And so our actuaries have modeled the amount of reinsurance to hopefully get close to a $450 per member per month premium, average premium across the state, to hopefully bring people back into the market to have a healthy and strong marketplace for the individuals, for the individual market.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the department brings us some very good points here that will continue to be discussed. One thing, the concern they had about the attachment point of $50,000 or the upper end, $250,000, the reason I wrote the language that way is because I think the new MSHA board or the MSHA board will need some flexibility when we see what's coming down from the federal government. I mean, I don't think it would be wise to just say it has to be $50,000 and it has to be $250,000. I think we need to have this board of experts be able to move forward. So that's the reason that I put some flexibility in there, so that depending on what the federal government does, they have to be able to move within that parameter.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Connor. We do appreciate your time this evening, and if you wouldn't mind sticking around for additional questions, we'd appreciate that. Of course, we understand if you have to take off as well. Next up, we have Catherine Commit from the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I do have some handouts if there's a page who could distribute them. Oh, there's the page. So, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Catherine Commit, and I represent the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, the State Trade Association for Minnesota's 7 nonprofit health plans. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on House File 5. The Council of Health Plans strongly supports the enactment of the reinsurance program as found in this bill. Such action is critical for stabilizing and sustaining health insurance options for Minnesotans. This bill takes a practical approach to helping Minnesotans get the health care they need. It is modeled after the federal reinsurance program, so its benefits are known, and it will help Minnesotans who buy their own insurance. Critics will say this bill is for the insurers. That is simply not true. This legislation is for people who want to get coverage because they worry about potential medical bills. And it is for people who know their medical bills will be much higher than their premiums could ever support. This reinsurance program is designed to help keep a market in place so people can afford to buy coverage. Right now, the math is simply not working. high medical bills cost more than reasonably can be paid in premiums. When 1.6% of the people create nearly 40% of the medical bills, it is critically important to get more people to buy insurance, not fewer. Unfortunately, that's not what's happening. 4 years ago, Minnesota's insurers and regulators expected that our nation-leading low premiums would encourage an estimated 530,000 people to get insurance on their own. These were the numbers that Gruber Gorman had estimated using their own actuarial model in which the state and health insurance industry relied upon. When that hope wasn't realized, expensive medical bills were not spread more broadly. Instead, they were spread across only about 270,000 people. That lower number of enrollees, in turn, led to dramatic premium increases for 2017, a painful increase that was needed to cover expected medical bills. Those 2017 premium increases had a big impact and compounded problems further because just this February, we learned that the number of people buying coverage had shrunk to 190,000 people. There's no magic in reinsurance. Here's how it works. Premiums are the sum of claims and expenses. When premium rates are set, they are based on expected claims. Without reinsurance, the cost of claims will be a lot higher. But having reinsurance will help pay the cost of expensive claims and will help reduce upward pressure on premiums. We need to pass something that is not only practical, but something that can be implemented quickly. Currently, the health plans are in the process of developing their product offerings and rates for 2018. These new products and rates must be filed in early May of this year. What you do directly impacts what products are available for Minnesotans this fall. This is why it is so important to enact the reinsurance program before the end of March. This is a critical problem that everyone agrees needs to be fixed. This bill offers an approach that is practical, quick, and proven. I just want to remind the committee members that health insurance is so expensive because health care is expensive. We appreciate the work that Representative Davids, Representative Hoppe, and their colleagues and staff have devoted to developing this important legislation, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify. I think what I will also do is just as a way of to provide some context, I'm going to pass out another document that just helps people to understand, because there seems to be some misunderstanding about how we actually got here, how we how we evolved to where we are today, especially since 2014 when the Affordable Care Act went into effect. And so what I'm having distributed now is just a chart that shows what the premiums were in 2014, 2015, 2016, and 2017. And Minnesota is the is depicted with the little red bar on each of these graphs. And you can see that in 2014, Minnesota had the lowest premiums in the nation. This is based on the average monthly premium for the second lowest cost silver plan for a 40-year-old in each of these states' largest market, and it's before the APTC tax credit. So you can see in 2014, we were the lowest. We had the lowest premiums in the nation. In 2015, we were number three. And by 2016, we were number eight. And by 2017, we were somewhere in the middle around 22, 23. And that's really where Minnesota really should be. And the reason I say that is because, Minnesota is number one in terms of health coverage. We have the lowest uninsured rate. We have super high quality care in Minnesota. We do a lot of things right, but one of the things that we still struggle with in this state is that we have higher cost of care than in some other states. And in fact, in a report done by the Minnesota Business Partnership, I think about 2 years ago, Minnesota ranked number one in just about everything, but we ranked 22nd compared to all other states for the cost of care. So we're really not where we ought to be, as in number one for the lowest cost of care, compared to all the other indicators. So as you can see, we're now more in the middle. And had we maybe started more in the middle, the adjustment to this process might have been easier to handle. I don't know. I would just, I would also just like to make a comment or two about the amendment that Representative Schultz brought forward. And in reading this amendment, there are a couple things that I just wanted to convey to the committee. The first section in the amendment appears to be a brand new tax. And I would, it looks, if I'm reading this correctly, it appears that this is an additional 1% tax that would be imposed on the fully insured market. I'm sorry, Representative Davids corrects me, up to 1%. But this is in addition to an existing 1% tax. So this would be 1% plus up to another 1%. And so that's what I think is on the first page. And then on the second page is this proposal to tax, or it says a tax is imposed on administrators of self-insured plans. Mm-hmm. And Representative Schultz is correct that there is this kind of claims tax that is in practice right now in Michigan. But ironically, we were just looking at that case today, or the program that they use in Michigan, and that has gone through the courts through a number of different iterations, and it is still moving through the court system. And so one of the things that I would be concerned about with doing that is that the industry wants to make sure they have certainty. They're in the process of developing their rates and their filings for 2018, and what we want to do is make sure that there is going to be some sort of a risk mitigation program in place so that the carriers have the assurance that there's going to be a way for them to participate in the market and attract enrollees with affordable products. So I just wanted to make that evident to the committee members. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Commit. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Commit, for being here. I'm just looking at the chart that you handed out, and then I want to go to 2017. And so we're talking about Minnesota and where they fall on this chart. And in 2017, here we are, you know, beyond the midpoint, and you are sharing with us that you think this is a reflection of where we really should be, that given the high quality of care and the costs here in Minnesota, that this is an accurate reflection of where we would be on this continuum going forward. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy, the reason I make that statement is because these premiums more accurately reflect the actual cost of care, so the claims that come in. And unfortunately, in years 2014, 2015, and 2016, the premiums that were being collected were not adequate enough to reflect the actual claims that were coming in. And so all of those years, the claims were much higher than the premiums. And so there needs to be that equilibrium. And so I would say I think we're getting closer to reaching that equilibrium.
And Mr. Chair, thanks, Mr. Chair. Ms. Commit, so here we are trying to stabilize the individual market with reinsurance. And it's important to stabilize the individual market. So if we spend the additional funds to do that, then would that stabilize the market and this would be our status quo then, so the premium rates would be about where they are right now, or, you know, move it up with inflation over time? Or would the anticipation be, if we put this additional funding into reinsurance, that Minnesotans would see their premium rates go down?
Ms. Commit.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy, that's a really hard question to answer for a couple of reasons. First of all, we don't know what the rates are going to be for 2018 yet, so that's one big factor that is unknown. Secondly, we don't know how many people are actually going to participate in the marketplace for 2018. Of course, we hope that there will be a lot of people, but we don't know exactly. So this is hard because we're going to have to kind of guess as best as we can to figure out what are the parameters in order to make this market affordable for people, to attract people and incent people to participate and buy coverage. So it's hard to say. We don't know. But I know that there are actuaries at the Department of Commerce. There are actuaries within the health plans and other really smart folks who are working to try to figure out as best as they can what are the right parameters to make this work.
And Mr. Chair, just two more. Thank you. Ms. Knitzer, is it a fair assumption to think this would be what we would look like going forward, given all the variability that you're describing, that given where we are in time, given the cost of care here in Minnesota, that we shouldn't anticipate that we would see a reduction in premiums for people when we make this step forward to stabilize the market?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy, it's hard to say. I mean, one of the other big factors of unknown is what's going to happen at the federal level. And I think that it's anecdotal, but it's possible that we are seeing people who have made the decision that because we have a Republican or the Trump administration in place, that means, you know, Obamacare has gone away, or I don't need to purchase coverage anymore because it's going to go away. And, you know, that is such a risky thing to do. But there are people who believe that they don't need to do that anymore. And so that's concerning. So I think that there's just so much uncertainty at the federal level. We just don't know.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think just briefly, in Congress tonight, I guess Congressman Ryan, introduced their repeal of the Affordable Care Act, and so I keep thinking about the individual mandate and the death spiral that could happen to the individual market if people who are healthy don't have to buy insurance at all, which I think if that happened, then these rates, the premium rates would continue to go up. We could anticipate, that's a fair assumption, right, that the premium rates could continue to go up even with this fix. Is that a fair statement?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy, I think that's a possible outcome. Again, there's just too much uncertainty to know exactly how this is going to play out.
Thanks.
And Representative Murphy, I know that I know a lot of 27-year-olds that aren't purchasing insurance because they can't afford it, and obviously trying to get the premiums down and competition up so that they get back into the market is going to be one of the principal goals, I would imagine, of this legislation. So I would see quite the opposite in terms of expanding the market. Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the Representative Murphy's comments. I don't think we're looking at going into a death spiral. We are in a death spiral. Talking to Commissioner Rothman months ago when we were about to lose the 2017 market in its entirety, some counties have lost in its entirety, we are in the death spiral now. It's happened with an individual mandate. So we're already there.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to answer a few questions that came up, the Michigan case, it is done going through the court system, so that has been decided. So I think there is no uncertainty about whether it's feasible or not to do the fee on medical claims, but we can debate that and you can testify in tax committee and with more information. But the other thing is that there's no guarantee that reinsurance will lower premiums or bring young people back into the market. We hope, but can you trust health plans? What has our history been with the health plans? The health carriers are supporting this reinsurance bill, and I think we might need reinsurance as a bridge, but we should be very skeptical about what's in the bill because it's the health plans that are going to profit. And they're the ones that set the low premium rates in 2014, 2015, and had to make up their losses and set higher premiums in 2017.
So I'd like to look at the data after people receive the advanced premium tax credit to see where we are. And our costs, it depends on how you measure those costs, what your metric is in terms of where we are on the spectrum compared to other states. I know our Medicare reimbursement, if we look at those costs, our state's very efficient in providing care historically, and that's why our Medicare reimbursement rates have been smaller.
Representative Albright.
I'll pass.
All right. Well, thank you, Ms. Commit. Oh, we do appreciate it. If you'd stick around, that would be great. I see Phil Griffin is making his way down. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Griffin. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony, but not until Representative David's response.
Thank you. Just let's clear something up here. The health plans did not approve the rates. The Department of Commerce approved the rates. And that's kind of a big distinction to make, because the health plans come with the rates, and if the Department of Commerce doesn't approve them, they don't have to. The problem we had in 2017 here, or in 2016 for 2017, Commissioner Rothman's back in a corner. He'd have a choice because there would have been no individual market had he not done what he did, and the market's very shabbily put together for 2017, as every member here knows.
All right.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the health plans propose the rates. Do you agree on that, Chair Davids?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mr. Chairman, Representative Schultz, the health plans propose the rates, but the department is responsible for approving them and has to stand by the rates that they approve.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Griffin. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Phil Griffin. I'm speaking today on behalf of America's Health Insurance Plans, AHIP, in favor of House File 5. AHIP is the national association whose members provide coverage for health care and related services. AHIP represents approximately 1,300 health insurance plans to provide coverage to millions of Americans. Our members include the plans who make up the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. AHIP would like to thank and echo Ms. Commit for her support of this bill and what the plans are doing. Additionally, I would like to thank Representative Davids. Mr. Chair, members, the individual market in Minnesota is in crisis. Thank you for all your work and attention. I appreciate your time this evening. If there are questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Griffin. Questions for Mr. Griffin?
No.
All right. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps I could have asked this of Ms. Commit, and maybe it's Chair Davids who would answer this. But under this bill, is it assumed that the federal money right now that's coming in to support the advanced premium tax credits is going to be gone, or is this bill assuming that that money is still available for part of the individual market as it is now?
Representative Davids.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, I believe we're assuming it will be there, but the department is concerned about making sure that any adjustments we make, that we don't lose funds from that. And maybe Mr. The finance person here could explain that a bit better. Maybe Mr. Griffin can.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Davids. No, I understood that from the department, that they want to make sure a couple of things. They want to make sure that that money is captured, and they want to make sure that the funding that we have right now for the basic health plan, which is quite a bit of the money that supports that, is also captured, and that the feds don't just take that away from us. But that's a different question. That's what they hope to achieve. But I'm talking about the bill that's before us. Does this bill that comes in with this funding of, like, well, as we were talking about, it's over $400 million, and I assume that that's for next year, to support the individual market and make sure there is an individual market that plans are want to come in with products and stay in the market. Does that amount of money, does that funding stream assume that we're still going to have those advanced premium tax credits? Because obviously when we did our premium discount program and we allocated the $300 million just recently for the 2017 market, that relies on there being premium tax credits for people under 400% of the federal poverty level. So we're not trying to support the entire market. We're only trying to support part of the market. So does your bill try to support the entire market with this 400 or so million, or does this assume that we're still getting some of the money that we're getting now from the feds?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm labeling. We will certainly, we're not setting a level of assumed funding from the feds, but if premiums go down, there is, you're correct, if premiums go down, there's less money collected, and so we don't want to be necessarily penalized for that, so that will be part of the process to work with the feds to hopefully get some waivers. I know Alaska is going through this process right now and has their paperwork in, but that's an unknown at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Davis, the reason I ask that, of course, is that, you know, not only because there's a question about whether we might get a waiver, but because Congress is going to repeal the whole thing. And we don't know what that's going to mean. I mean, they could repeal the whole thing. So we don't know if that means they're going to take away that money, which is part of Obamacare right now. So that's why I'm asking you. So I guess what I'm understanding from this bill is that, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, it captures some funds that are out there, and it directs them to some, in some way, supporting this reinsurance. You know, and I understand it kicks in at the $50,000 and whatever, it has this way of doing it, but really, this doesn't, at this point, we have no idea whether this money is sufficient to make any difference at all in what happens. I mean, I understand you're putting this forward and saying, oh, well, this will help insurers make a decision to be in the market, but we have no idea, really. This is kind of in a bit of a vacuum, I think, isn't it?
Representative Davis.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, you are exactly right. We are flying blind. I'm the pilot, and I'm trying to clean out the windshield best I can. But there's a lot of unknowns. Back to your point on, we're going to allow the MSHA board to take advantage of federal funding as it comes in. The way the bill's written, it allows them to use that funding, but we don't know if there's any coming. You know, there's talk about block grants to the states. What's a block grant to the states? I don't know. So I'm carrying a bill that I want to be very clear on. There's a lot of things we have no clue about what we're doing.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Davis, I appreciate that you're candid about that, because we obviously are in a situation where we do not know what the feds are going to do to us. And you and I have a little maybe different viewpoint on Obamacare and so on, but it is very clear that a lot of federal money that's coming into Minnesota to support health care for Minnesotans is going to probably go away. So so I guess that I would say that, you know, it's great that the health insurance companies, the insurers, like this idea. They want more money to be available for insurance without being able to tell us what the results would be. I understand that they have a lot of uncertainties too, a lot of the same ones we have, but it seems to me that if we're in a lower resource environment and we, the state, is going to be in a situation, well, right now we're in the situation of great uncertainty about what the feds are going to do to us, how much funding is going to be available for healthcare, period, whether it's for people in the individual market, whether it's for people who are on Medicaid, whether it's for our Minnesota Care program, we just don't know. And so it seems to me that rather than thinking about how to support insurance companies, and that we ought to think about how to provide health care. And so, you know, the way I look at all of these plans and the way I measure them is how do they move us toward the goal that I think most of us share, of providing quality health care for Minnesotans at a price they can afford. And while I appreciate that you're thinking about how to work this, I would just suggest that there is a point at which we have to, I think, admit that insurance is not something that Minnesotans love. It's a vehicle that has been used to get people to care. But I would argue that it's been a pretty inefficient and ineffective vehicle, and that most people hate insurance. Most people do not want to deal with insurance, and that we should start focusing instead on how to get people the care they need at a price they can afford. And, you know, just to be clear, at this very moment, how could we do that? I think we could start working on and thinking about the governor's Minnesota Care buy-in plan as one, at least short-term, stopgap way to focus on care and stop worrying so much about propping up insurance companies.
Thank you, Representative Liebling, and thank you, Mr. Griffin, for your testimony. Next up, we have Mary Pinkey from the Minnesota Hospitals Association. And what I'd like to do is go through the next five testifiers, if we could, and hold questions for those afterwards. I think we've gotten a little far afield for the discussion at hand. Unless you have something for the individual testifier, I would like to move through that. We've already been here for an hour 45, so I'd like to move a little quicker if we could, please. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Krinke. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. We represent 142 hospitals across the state and healthcare systems. MHA supports the goal of trying to stabilize the individual market, and we recognize the importance of doing this very quickly. While MHA would strongly prefer that this bill contained more general fund dollars and less reliance on the Health Care Access Fund, that's important, our organization is appreciative of the balanced approach taken by Representative Davids and with the current language found in House File 5. The bill relies on several funding sources and reflects a shared responsibility approach, which is what MHA generally supports. The bill uses some general fund dollars, not as much as we would like, but it does use some. Since consumers are the key beneficiaries of this legislation, with hopefully some reduced premium costs, using general fund dollars seems to be the fairest and the broadest base funding source to use. Number two, the bill uses a 1% HMO premium tax. This may be an appropriate funding source. We think it's probably a good funding source. That said, it should be noted that this does reduce a funding stream for the Health Care Access Fund into the future. Number three, if Health Care Access Fund is to be used, we recommend that we only use it for this two-year period and not on an ongoing basis. Number four, the fourth funding source, as Representative David says, is the last resort, in his words, a restarting of the MCHA assessment to help pay for the program in 2019. This allows a little more time to see if federal monies will be forthcoming. It also means that no single health insurance company bears a disproportionate burden if the sickest populations choose that insurance company's products. Without this mechanism, the reinsurance price tag to the state may just keep going up and up. In closing, MHA is concerned about the use of the Health Care Access Fund. As everyone has said already tonight, there is so much uncertainty at the federal level. We believe that the Health Care Access Fund should be used for its intended purpose, which is coverage for low-income Minnesotans. We look forward to working with this committee as this bill moves through the legislative process. I would just like to close by saying, asking legislators to please take a shared responsibility approach using multiple funding sources rather than just the Health Care Access Fund. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Krinke. We do appreciate it. Next up, we have Bentley Graves from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Graves. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm the Director of Healthcare and Transportation Policy at the Minnesota Chamber. I want to echo the thanks that other folks have given to Chair Davids in bringing this forward, and others who've worked on this legislation. A lot of folks don't necessarily see the business community as having much interest in the individual market. They think of businesses obviously being in the group market. But the individual market, I'll remind members, is where folks who are self-employed go for health insurance. But increasingly, it's also where a number of small employers have turned to with their employees to find health insurance when they haven't been able to keep up with the rate increases in the group market. So the business community does have a strong interest in stabilizing the individual market, and certainly appreciate the efforts being taken here to use reinsurance to do just that. When it comes to reinsurance, the chamber has kind of set out three kind of priority principles, one of which is mechanically that we find a reinsurance program that can be stood up quickly and efficiently. Secondly, that whatever reinsurance program we move forward with is big enough to make the intended difference. You heard some testimony here from the Department of Commerce on that piece. And then finally, that when we talk about how to fund this program, that we find funding mechanisms that don't further burden premium payers in the fully insured market. And this House File 5 certainly hits on a number of those pieces, and we certainly appreciate that. We do, and I know Chair Davis has mentioned this a couple times, that there is some additional work going into this bill as it moves forward, and we certainly would be interested in working with the chairman on the particular piece that has been mentioned a couple times, the kind of the turning on again of the MCHA assessment. The reason why we're concerned about that is because right now small businesses and individuals in the individual market pay about 10 cents of every fully insured premium dollar in taxes, and that compares to just under 3 cents for larger employers that are self-insured. That's a big disparity and tends to be a big burden on premiums and on costs for those in the fully insured market. So we appreciate the shared responsibility approach that this has, splitting responsibility between the general fund, health care access fund, and taxes already paid by fully insured premiums, and look forward to continuing to work with Chair Davids on this as it goes forward, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Gates. We do appreciate it. And next up, we have John Tollefson from the Minnesota Nurses Association. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Tollefson, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Tollefson, and I represent the Minnesota Nurses Association, and well, I was grateful to our friend Chair Davids for being gracious and encouraging us to testify even when it may be in opposition. So thank you for having us here today. I mean, it wasn't clear in comments. But thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy explained very eloquently earlier why nurses care so much about this issue, and nurses have made healthcare finance reform one of our main priorities for many, many years. And so, what we're looking for is a system that makes sure that everyone can access care when they need it. And so, with acknowledgement of the earlier comments that health insurance has been available. When people can't afford it is when our concern comes in. And so people can't access the care they need when they're unable to afford insurance. And when it's a 27-year-old looking to buy insurance, especially if the individual mandate is removed from law, and you look at these skyrocketing premiums that we saw in the individual market this year, it's simply unaffordable for people to participate. And many would argue that we need those 27-year-olds. And so if it's a $6,000 deductible and high premiums to begin with, it's very difficult to sustain a market on that terms. So when we look at the problems with the individual market, much of it has to do with insurance companies themselves. And so without laying blame at their feet, simply talking about the system, we see pooling that does not spread risk around sufficiently. And we see a high administrative expense that really puts a burden on hospitals and providers to essentially bring payments into the hospital for claims, to actually get those claims paid. You know, if you look at charts on the increase in nurses and doctors over the past many decades, you'll see stagnation relatively in that area. But you see billing specialists that have increased and skyrocketed in terms of numbers relative to that. And that's because of the complexity of our system now. And so when we're talking about such a small percentage of the market, 5% or so, it doesn't make sense to continue to divide them up into many different pools where they share the high costs of claims within their own pool. And so we have, the legislature has two proposals before right now to address the instability in the individual market. One of them, of course, is this program, but the other is the Minnesota Care Buy-In program that the governor has proposed. And we see expanding the pool to include everyone in the individual market as much more efficient and affordable. And I know that's not always the most popular plan, but what we see is a more affordable option for people in every county in Minnesota to access health care. So what we would ask is that the committee not to decide to spend hundreds of millions of dollars when they don't need to, when Minnesota Care Buy-In has zero ongoing expenses because premiums are paid from that larger pool and risk is shared over a larger group of people. So, Mr. Chairman, we would prefer to have you have zero dollars on reinsurance or on this in your bottom line in the budget, and instead go with the Minnesota Care Buy-In, which would be more sustainable and efficient overall. Thank you for letting me be here tonight.
Thank you for your testimony. We do appreciate it. Next up, we have Lars Negsted from ISEA. All right. Not here. Next up is Twyla Braze, President, Citizens Council for Healthcare Freedom. Or Matt Flanders? No? All right. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? All right. Seeing none, we'll go to member questions and then final thoughts from Representative Davis. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Davis. We have seen how the market can creatively respond to anything that we put before them. And since you've studied this and I haven't, I'm wondering what other states that have instituted these kinds of reinsurance programs have seen in terms of provider billing practices. I know that, when the feds went to DRG systems and you got paid on the average amount of time and treatment that it took to fix something, a broken hip or whatever, when people got to the average, all of a sudden they were being pushed out of the hospital because they could lose money if they stayed beyond the average. And my question is, for those, we're going to have people pick the attachment points that the insurer will cover, then you're going to hit a middle of the donut hole where 50 to 70% will be picked up by the reinsurance. And then if you go over a quarter million or whatever is set as that next cap, it's all back on the insurer again. And, you know, are we at risk of rates going up in that middle section because you get to dump it all on the state? And then all of a sudden see all kinds of new gatekeepers when you go above the cap. And all of a sudden it's really hard to get prior authorization or authorization to get beyond $250,000 of care if that were the point. Can you give us any insights as to how this has worked out from the provider side and the patient side?
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Loeffler, could you repeat the question?
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, what we have found is when you change the financing in health care, providers change their billing practices. And so if the state is picking up 50 to 70% of the costs within, you know, whatever that middle section is of the bill, do states that have implemented that before see those costs of service going up? And then when you hit the point where once again it's all on you, whether that's $250,000 or whatever the cap is, do we see new obstacles to getting your care authorized beyond that point? Because we have seen those kind of things happen. And since we're going to pick up out of this committee's budget the cost of health care for people on MA and Minnesota Care, which tend to follow sometimes the other parts of the market in pricing, I'm wondering if that's a concern we should be thinking about. Because we tend to deal with sort of the practical end of how it works in provider billing.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Loeffler, yes, we should be concerned.
And do you know how other states handle that?
Representative Loeffler, I don't. I do know something a bit about the Alaska plan, but they're doing a bit differently with the presumptive conditions. And I'm not sure what other states have really done. I'm not sure what we're doing.
All right.
Yeah, Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I wasn't trying to play stump the chairman in any way. I mean, I do think it is serious because we do pick up in this budget the health care billings that are, and if you create certain incentives, certain prices go up, new prior authorization barriers go up to patients, and our goal is not to have people denied care at any point who are seriously ill.
Representative Considine.
I think I'll skip the thank you.
All right. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a clarification so we're all on the same page. Access to health insurance or access to health care doesn't mean that we actually can get it. Mm-hmm. It means that we may not be able to afford it. So I can access the market for yachts, right? But I can't buy one because I don't have the money to buy one. So we need to make sure that there is a difference. We had access to a whole bunch of different types of health insurance plans before the ACA, but people couldn't afford to buy one, so they didn't have coverage. We had a very high rate of uninsurance in the state. People did not have insurance. After the ACA, that dropped significantly in Minnesota and across the country. If we were better off before the ACA, if everything was so great, why did we go through the rigors of working on reform and passing the ACA? Obviously, things were not great, and we needed to have some major reforms. And, you know, it feels like we're rushing through this reform, but Republicans, you guys have had 7 years to work on something to replace the ACA. You spent a lot of time criticizing the ACA. And now we're thinking about what do we need to rush through to address it if the ACA is repealed and to shore up a market-based system that was from a conservative idea to have markets in health insurance to address costs and access. And finally, I think that we need to learn from what's happened in the past so it's okay to talk about it, as long as we learn from it and our mistakes and make it better for people and for Minnesota. And we're different. Minnesota's different, right? We're above average, according to Garrison Keillor. And I think that we can all come together and work on something in a bipartisan way, but we have to show up to those meetings. So when we meet with the governor, we want to make sure the leaders on health care are there so we can have a discussion going forward. And my amendment, where we assess a fee on claims and make it very broad-based, may replace some of our other revenue streams and may simplify it. And it's a conservative idea, so I feel like it's a bipartisan proposal that hopefully we can get on board with something to make sure everyone in Minnesota has true coverage, can get the health care they need, because there just simply is no substitute for health care. And I think of it as a right, and if we can overcome that, agree on that, then I think we can come up with some really good solutions, regardless of what happens at the federal level. I don't have a lot of confidence right now of what's going to happen at the federal level. We have to come up with our own solutions.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of points. First of all, before the ACA, Minnesota has some of the lowest uninsured rates in the country. That's a fact. Today, a lot of more people actually have health insurance, but they don't have health care because the family can't afford a $13,100 deductible. And I was a bit amused with my good friend, Representative Schultz, when she said, in the last 7 years, why didn't the Republicans just replace the ACA? Well, we had this president named Barack Obama. It's kind of tough to do that when anything that would have moved forward would have been vetoed. And, you know, I've been looking at reading the A3 amendment a bit, and I'm just thinking that might be too conservative of an idea for me. It's pretty far to the right. So I'm very concerned about it, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you've had 7 years to come up with ideas while there was President Obama and the presidency and the repeals failed. So I think you've had enough time to come up with different ideas. The problem is I think that the exchange and some of those ideas, they were the Republican ideas and they failed. And I don't want to argue. I just want to, I came here to work on solutions. I want to work with everyone on identifying some real solutions that are going to work. And in Minnesota, we reduced the number of uninsured significantly from pre to post ACA. We might have had some of the lowest rates in the country, that was true. But we have even lower rates today because of the ACA.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I was very serious when I said, I don't want to look back. But you keep looking back. That does us no good whatsoever. We have to move forward. We are in crisis. I think Commissioner Rothman has been very, very clear that this has to be done. So we don't have to do anything. If this committee wants to do nothing, I'll just have the next few nights off. So if you want to do nothing, fine. But if you want this thing to stall and get nowhere, keep bringing up the past. We have to look in the future, not the past. What you're saying about the past is very destructive to what I'm trying to do here and what we're trying to do and what we have to do as a body. So go ahead, keep talking about the past, do nothing. That's up to you. But we have a crisis created by the ACA, and we're trying to do some things to fix it. If we want to talk about the past, we're going nowhere, really, really fast. We need to move forward and move into the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I agree that we need to go forward. I'm just saying that we can learn from the past. So I just want to correct the record and make sure we have the facts on the record. That's why I'm talking about where we were before in terms of the number of uninsured and where we are today. And we can do better. I agree. I want to move forward. I want to work on a solution. I think reinsurance is something that we may need to bridge to get something better, because I don't know if we can completely do an overhaul by April 1st. So I'm not disagreeing that we should. I'm not saying we should do nothing. We need to do something. I just feel like right now we're rushing, and we were at the table last year trying to come up with some ideas when we did know that the individual market was failing.
Representative Davids, then we're going to go to Representative Fisher.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I am rushing. I'm going just as fast as I can because we have a crisis we need to deal with now. So is this the long-term fix forever? No, it's not. I'm trying to get through 2018, folks. That's all I'm trying to do here, setting up for 19, 20, 21, and beyond. But the funding mechanisms aren't going to last to 2019 and 2020 and 2021. But yes, I think anybody that thinks that we don't have to move quickly, go talk to Commissioner Rothman. He's absolutely right when he says we have to do it, and we have to do it now. And we'll have to work together to figure it out. But if we keep bringing up the past, we're going backwards. And the further you go backwards, it's tougher to go forward. I just made that up. Somebody might have said that before, but I don't know who.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First question I have is to Chair Davids is on his bill. We've been talking a lot about the individual market, but there's another part of the market that has been suffering and has been crisis for quite a while, and that's the small business market. And the first question I have is along the lines is, do any of the reforms that you have through here, will they have a positive impact to help address what's happening in the small business market?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davids.
Representative Fisher, very good question. I don't believe so. This is specifically designed to the individual market, and we're not talking about lowering costs necessarily. We're talking about the reinsurance. And so, no, you're exactly right, though. I mean, the small group market is suffering also, but this bill does not address that.
And the reason I bring that up is since 85, I've been in small businesses or working for small nonprofits, and I've seen over time how things kind of evolved. And I've always been, unfortunately, I've been blessed with having to try to figure out how to recover our employees, trying to find the right plans. And when I go back to 85, I remember the challenges we had back then. Some of them have been addressed as we've gone forward over time. Is back in 85, we had one of our staff who had a child who had a severe birth defect, and as we were trying to control our costs and find insurance, the problem that we had is because at the time pre-existing conditions weren't covered, we couldn't move from one plan to another. And one of the great things as we've moved forward in this state, we've changed that, where now we don't have that pre-existing condition type thing out there. But the problem is as we do this, that starts raising some of the costs. Somewhere along that line, we have to start addressing it. And I think as we're looking at this type of thing, it's continued to multiply in the small business climate. I know that for myself, my family in 80, in 10 years ago, when we were going from the business I was working at to where I am now, we had a gap where we didn't have coverage. And it frightened the heck out of me, because at the time we were a family of five, my wife and I were in our 40s. The price for our coverage for insurance under COBRA was over $1,500 a month. Can't afford that. You know, today I've got people complaining about that, right? This is what the small business market was 10 years ago. When trying to find alternatives, as we were looking out there, it's the biggest thing I ever had to worry about in my life, is trying to find coverage. At that time, the market out there, under individual, trying to find something that would be a stopgap for even a couple of months, had these huge deductibles of $10,000 and $20,000, and there were all sorts of conditions that, fortunately today, we're covering. But back then, we're not. It was the worst time in my life as we try to deal with that. Moving forward to today, the crisis still exists in the small business market. And when I say a crisis, we're hearing about the crisis in the individual market. I've run into too many small nonprofits, too many small businesses are saying, while the rates may look terrible, they're better than what we're experiencing in the small business market. And the thing is we've heard so much about segmentation in here, I think it's time we start taking a look, how do we start bringing different markets together to try to spread the risk? And I think that's one of the important things that we have to look at, is we're too narrowly focused. We've got to start thinking broader. On top of it, this is why I like the proposal that I heard from Representative Schultz, is trying to take a look, what is a broad-based way that we can start getting it, so we've got more people who are right now out of the game, getting some skin into the game and helping cover for some of these costs. And I think that is I would recommend to Chair Davids, as you're going forward, please take a serious look at what's being proposed by Representative Schultz. The other issue I had kind of a question is, I get kind of nervous on the fact that we're doing the reinsurance thing straight to the insurance companies. I get a little nervous on that, and like, I know that the plan that we had to put together in the short term was very difficult, and there was a lot of angst back and forth. What I heard from some people was that they'd like to see is they could see that subsidy coming through and knowing how much that subsidy was offsetting. When we do it as a general insurance, we have no clue how much is being offset there. We, you know, the individual person doesn't. And I kind of like the idea is the individual person is able to see what is that subsidy covering. And I think it also brings up the question in a broader base, is that unless we have subsidies available out there, insurance costs have gotten so high that people aren't able to afford being able to be in the market. And we need to, you know, that's why I come back to is bringing up the small business market, is starting to say, instead of continuing to fraction things, let's start bringing the groups together and start trying to tackle it from a different option.
Thank you. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Davis, I do appreciate the fact that you're trying to move this quickly, because we do have a deadline. We have a very real deadline. And so we really do need to do something. And it may be that reinsurance of some kind becomes part of the something. But I have some real issues with this bill that you've brought to us tonight. And a couple of them I'm sort of surprised that the GOP is not more concerned about. I mean, one being the use of the Health Care Access Fund, which Ms. Krinke mentioned, because, you know, that's always been something that Chair Dean in particular has, you know, been apparently very concerned about using that, and the provider community has been very concerned about that being used for things that it wasn't intended for. And even though the tax is sunsetting still, or at least the assumption is being made here that tax is going to sunset, the money collected is still being taken and used for a whole different group of people than was intended. So I think that is a problem. It's also a problem that I know that when we talked about House File 1 and we put together that discount program, there was a lot of angst on the Republican side about subsidies that were not related to income, that everybody was getting the same subsidy if you were rich or just barely wealthy enough to not get the premium tax credits. So there was some talk about, you know, you could be a millionaire and you're still getting the 25% off. Well, under this program, I don't see that there's any calibration by income. and you could correct me if I'm wrong, but because this is going to the insurance companies in some form, and I guess it's going to people depending on their health costs, but it's not being, there's nothing that says that a person who's wealthier should pay more of their own, as opposed to somebody who's, you know, barely able to afford the insurance. So those things are a couple of things that are a little troubling to me. But I really think that, and I think that the commissioner, Commissioner Rothman, would agree that what we need to measure any proposals by a few things. And one is, are they going to bring stability to the market? And I think you talked about that. That's maybe the one thing that this proposal has a chance to do, is bring some stability in the sense that plans would perhaps be willing to stay in the market. Then I think we have to also look at whether it brings affordability to the consumer. And that's the thing that everybody's been so concerned about for the last many months, that premiums have gone up and deductibles have gone up, and having insurance is almost meaningless when you can't go to the doctor because you're so concerned about the out-of-pocket costs and you're barely making it on the premium. So if this plan doesn't do anything for affordability, or we don't know what it's going to do, that gives me great concern about, you know, committing $400 million plus state dollars. And the other thing is access. And I think by that I mean access to providers. And I know you've said that there are other things that are going to do that. I don't know what you have in mind to provide that access, because right now we know those narrow networks are one of the ways that insurance companies try to control costs. And there are a lot of reasons for that. I think it's a terrible feature of the insurance system that they've narrowed and narrowed who you can go to get your care. I think that's just a feature of insurance. Maybe it's a bug, but it's a part of the insurance system. So, you know, it may be that we end up with some kind of reinsurance, but it's got to help. Whatever we do, it's got to do something for access, it's got to do something for stability, and it's got to do something for affordability. Otherwise, you know, it's very rare that I agree with Twyla Braze, and it's kind of unfortunate she isn't here, but she did put a letter in her packets, and I hope it's here for the public as well. And honestly, there's nothing she says here that I don't agree with, which is scary as heck.
Sure, note that for the record.
You know, and so it's kind of too bad she isn't here, as somebody from her organization. But, you know, this is starting a big new government program with lots and lots of taxpayer dollars. And, you know, I think we all understand we're in a really urgent situation. We have this terrible uncertainty situation. But I just hope that, you know, and I would vote for the bill tonight to move it out of committee so that you can keep working on it, because I think we're in a desperate situation. It doesn't have to be perfect. We can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good here, because we just can't afford to do that. But I have grave concerns about this proposal. I really don't like the idea of spending tons of state money to insure insurance companies. When I know, when I talk to groups about healthcare, I ask people, how many of you like dealing with your insurance company? And I've never had one person raise their hand. Because, you know, because even if they have good coverage to deal with insurance plans, and, you know, having the bills go back and forth and figuring out what you have to pay and what they're paid, and, you know, making sure that nobody makes a mistake, and on and on and on. It's a lot of people's time and energy. And, you know, when you are sick, the last thing you should have to do is worry about whether you're going to be covered. And yet everybody who has insurance, who has, you know, private insurance, has that worry. So I wish we could take this crisis and actually get something better for people than having to deal with insurance companies and reinsuring the insurance companies so that we can go on with this pretending that we have a market system, which we have not really had for a very, very long time. So thank you. And so, Representative Davis, I do thank you for wrestling with this issue. And, you know, I hope that you can be successful, because we all need you to be successful. We all need to be successful together for the people of Minnesota that really need health care. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. We'll go to Representative Murphy and then Chair Davids to wrap up, and then we're going to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davids, if I ask you a few more questions, it'll be late enough. We can go out and have eggs and hash browns together, and that sounds like a good thing, don't you think?
Mr. Chairman, I can't do hash browns anymore. Eggs are good.
Eggs are good, and bacon. Thank you for carrying the bill and for your work, and obviously it's got work. You've got work ahead of you, probably not just the next couple of nights. I am concerned about what I think is a fair assumption that if we go forward with reinsurance and we don't do anything more, that the premium rates for the people in the individual market are going to stay at the rate that they are. We'll have stabilized the market, and I agree with you that that's an important thing. But we won't have relieved the cost for the families that was a critical crisis point for the Speaker of the House last October. And so I think that we've got a concern. I've got a concern about that, and I'm sure others do as well. Representative Davids, do you know what the premium rates would be for people if they were able to buy into Minnesota Care? I don't have that with me here. But, you know, the governor's proposing that buy into Minnesota Care. And I'm just wondering if we were able to line the rates up in the individual market right now against what would the rates be if people were able to buy into Minnesota Care. Do you know that, or should we have someone come down from
Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Murphy. I believe it's $462.39 a month.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so that would be less than what the premium rates are for people on the individual market right now. Is that accurate, Mr.
Representative Davids?
Well, you're setting off a whole set of problems with the governor's plan in that reimbursement rates to carriers, its assessment would be about $1 billion less. To think that you could keep it at that rate, I mean, I think they just picked it out of the sky. I don't think it's an accurate number at all. That's what's being said. So I think, you know, I don't know if people realize when they woke up on November 9th what happened, but things have changed. We're in a different place. We're in a different universe. And what I look at, maybe I'm just too practical. I'm not as conservative as some members here, but I have to count. My job as tax chair is very easy, and I'm so thankful that you do the work you do, because I want no part of it. But my charge is very, very easy as tax chair. I have to count. I have to count to 68, 34, and 1. 68 votes in the House, 34 in the Senate, 1 governor to sign. That's what I'm trying to do here. Is this the bill the governor's going to sign like it right here? Probably not. I'd say it's probably not. There's some good ideas in it. I share many of the same concerns that you do, but 68, 34, and 1. And my good friend from the nurses, and I know I've heard the Isaiah testimony before, I don't know if they realize what happened November 9th, but they can't get 68, 34, and 1. They can't do it. It's not there. So if you go to the governor's plan, we don't have the 68, 34, and 1. I'm trying to get to a place where we have 68, 34, and 1. That's what I'm trying to do. I work very closely with the Commerce Department, Mr. Brickwitty, and others, over there, Commissioner Rothman himself, because I have to get to 68, 34, and 1. So we can talk platitudes all day long, but you can't get to 68, 34, and 1 with some of these proposals. I don't know if I can get to 68, 34, and 1 with my proposals. I don't know. But, you know, Representative Murphy, you and I on the teacher's health bill, that was not easy, but we kept working at it. And we got it done, and now there's people trying to destroy it, and I'm going to try not let that happen. That's another issue. So, Mr. Chairman, members, just remember the numbers that I remember, 68, 34, and 1. That's what I'm trying to get to. Now, the tax bill, House Bill 848, I cut everything except the 1. Don't stop believing.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davids, I'm glad you brought up the Health Insurance Transparency Act, because with that, we did something very, very much like allowing people to buy into Minnesota Care and creating
a competitor, if you will, in the marketplace that is public and creates a different kind of competition and allows people a choice. And I think that if Minnesotans had the choice to buy an insurance premium that cost them $462 a month and they had access to an adequate network across the state of Minnesota, they'd be pretty happy. And I bet almost some of this $400 million that we're spending on reinsurance, we could improve the rates. We would go to Medicare rates, but we can improve the rates to providers. And it would be an alternative. And what I'm hearing by your number, 62-34-1, that there are not 68 votes in the Minnesota House of Representatives to support $462 a month for Minnesotans, which is a better deal for them in the premium rates. And I think that's good that we're getting that on the record. There is a lot of work left to do in this proposal. We know that the federal funding that's included in here is uncertain. We know that if we use the 1% premium tax to pay for this, we're going to create a hole in another part of the budget that we're going to have to deal with, and that's an uncertainty as well. But I think the thing that bothers me the most is that we're going to spend $400 million of tax dollars to stabilize a market, but we're not going to guarantee Minnesotans a better price for their health insurance. And Chair Davids, I know you are a tough negotiator, and we have negotiated side by side. And I can't demand from you, but I want so much and really expect that as you are moving this bill forward, that you extract a better deal from the health plans. There should be more of an expectation from the insurance companies. If we're going to stabilize their market, we should try and get a better deal for Minnesotans and their premium rates. And that should be our concerted effort together. Because as we heard the speaker say last October, these rates that people are being charged are unacceptable. It's a crisis. It's critical. And if what we do is reinsurance and Minnesotans are left with those same rates, we haven't moved the ball very far for them, and that should be our goal.
Final word, Representative Davids.
Well, I have several final words. First of all, the $454.62.39 figure, they get there by destroying the health plans, by destroying the health plans and destroying the providers. So, but that's not for tonight. And I'll be very brief. Representative Liebling, I consider you a good friend, but you made a comment tonight that I do have to address. Very respectfully. You made a statement that people hate insurance, and you know that could be true. Some people do hate insurance, but on August 10th of 2010, I had quadruple bypass surgery. I didn't hate insurance. I love insurance. My neighbor's house burned down. He had full replacement cost on that house. I took him a check for the whole house. They don't hate insurance. They love insurance. I took a check out for a family where there's a 30-year-old husband, two kids, and mom got killed by a drunk driver. They didn't hate insurance because that insurance money is going to put those two kids through school, through college. They don't hate insurance. Had a mother five pass away, took a check for $500,000 some years ago. I've been doing this a long time. All those five kids are college graduates. They don't hate insurance. They don't hate insurance at all. Grandpa went in the nursing home. I sold him a long-term care policy. Grandma likes insurance because it's saving the family farm for the kids. So, yeah, it's. I know it's sport around here to beat up insurance companies. I get that. But that hate's a strong word, and it does a lot of good for a lot of people. And I'll just sum up very briefly,
no.
That if members of the committee here or members of the House and Senate are going to say Republican, we're going to lose this fight. And it's a fight. If members of this committee and members of the House and Senate say Democrat, we're going to lose. We better start saying Minnesotans because we have to win. We have to win for Minnesota. And so I'd appreciate you passing this bill of tax me, and I'll think about giving it a hearing.
I will renew my motion that House File 5, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. House File 5, as amended, is referred.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you, Representative Davids, and to the testifiers, do appreciate your time this evening.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you. Well, I do think it would be fair for me to be able to clarify. I think that Representative Davids, of course, took my remark a bit out of context. Of course, health insurance is different than auto insurance and life insurance and so on, and my remarks were directed to health insurance. So I just want to be very clear about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Do appreciate that. And for any of the folks who would like to continue the debate on Obamacare, I know not everybody got in on that, and we wanted more time. I'd be happy to come to any of your hometowns and debate for as long as you like, whenever you like. So I just want to throw that out there. I know we didn't quite get to enough of that, so with that, we are adjourned.